These are those moments when Jesus begins to, in a sense, bare his teeth. And it's because it's the same God who speaks in Ezekiel is the same God who's now speaking in the streets of Galilee and in the places of Capernaum. It's the same God who is speaking. And one of the weird things that when we look at these passages, we must remember that in the sense of us being like God's children, we react to the passages the same way that a child reacts to a parent's discipline. Even if the parent's discipline is loving, the child only imagines the horizon that they see. And then the result is that, well, they just think that mom and dad hate them because they're saying, don't do this. And one of the best ways of seeing that is in Ezekiel, it says that if the person does X or commits sinfulness, then they will die. But when we read it, we think that that's something God will then impose on us, that God will execute judgment in the same way that in this world, if you do something bad and get caught, you will be punished. In the realm of God, you are already caught the moment you do it. And the punishment is having sinned. That's the problem. We were made for God and for love. To do something evil, to do something harmful to another person, is to harm ourselves and our own nature. If we were meant to love and to be loved, to do anything less than that is like putting diesel in an unleaded engine. It might work for a time, but eventually it will destroy the engine. And so we need to understand that God is not imposing a sentence on us. The sentence is already imposed by ourselves to ourselves. We don't want God, we want something else. And the result of it is the misery that comes with the sin itself. And this becomes a weird cycle of violence that God has no desire to be a part of. God even says it in the very Ezekiel passage. I don't want the sinner to die. This is not my intent. Jesus repeats the same thing in the Gospel of John, where he says very explicitly that it is the Father's desire that everyone should come to him. But he also laments to the people and says, you will not come to me so that you may have life. You will not come to me so that you may have life. And this might help us understand today's gospel and tomorrow's gospel, which we won't hear, so I'm just going to comment on it anyway. So what happens in tomorrow's gospel is Jesus reiterates and underlines the meaning of the law. When the disciples had gathered around Jesus on the mountain, he spoke to them, you have heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, so that you may be your children of your Father in heaven, who makes his sun rise on the evil and on the good, and sends rain on the righteous and on the unrighteous. For if you love those who love you, what reward do you have? Do not even the tax collectors do the same? And if you greet only your brothers and sisters, what more are you than the others? Do not even the Gentiles do the same? Be perfect, therefore, as your heavenly Father is perfect. That's not a nice platitude. I've mentioned earlier in this week that the purpose of being a Christian, as St. Athanasius and many of the church fathers said, is that God becomes human so that humans can become like God. God descends so that humanity can ascend. And this is why when Jesus says, unless your righteousness exceeds that of the scribes and Pharisees, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. But for those of us who live on the plane of this earth, that sounds like an amazing thing. But it ain't. The scribes and the Pharisees choose nitpicky laws because they're achievable. They're measurable. This is something that drove me crazy in the seminary because they would give you these little self-evaluation forms and they would say, what are your goals and objectives for the seminary year? And I was like, I don't know. How am I supposed to know how I'm supposed to grow over the course of an entire year? And so after a while, I just made up stupid answers. And I just kind of played the game, but I didn't actually do anything about it. Because how am I supposed to know where I'm supposed to be and the type of man that God is gradually making me into? But we always want something measurable. We always want to be able to see external signs of progress. And God gives us sometimes external signs of progress. But we must never think that the external sign of progress is in fact the progress itself. Being able to not eat meat on Fridays during Lent, that is the minimum. We need to do that. Well, of a certain age, the meat on Fridays, that one's just done. That's a minimum. Fasting, that's the difficult one. But it doesn't prove you're a saint. Giving money to charity is nice. It doesn't prove you're a saint. Going to church on Sunday is nice. It doesn't prove you're a saint. God even withholds knowledge of sanctity even to ourselves. This is really important. That the moment we think we are a saint, there's a good chance we're heading downward. And then there's that moment when we realize that, oh man, I really screwed up. That might actually be the launching pad of you going higher than you ever thought possible. God is the agent of our sanctification. Because Athanasius and the other saints also made it abundantly clear that what proves and demonstrates the divinity of Jesus is that he is able to turn us into children of the Father. Only God can raise humanity to equality with God. It's an amazing principle. Only God can raise us up to equality with God. And he does it by humbling himself. So we can handle a little humble pie every now and again and feel that stinging pain of being able to say, I really don't measure up. Because that's the exact thing that the Pharisees are afraid of admitting. The reason why they're legalistic is they want to prove to God that they're good. They want to prove it with all their heart and all their mind that all their fasting and all of their penances and all of their almsgiving really prove that they're good little boys. But if we know the love that the Father has for us, such insecure wrangling really is pointless. The Father loves us. The problem is not how much he loves us. That has been proven. The problem is how much are we willing to love him back? And if you're going to start asking me, Father, how much? I will again cite Jesus, as is my job. Unless your righteousness exceeds that of the scribes and Pharisees, we will never enter the kingdom of heaven. We must be perfect, as our heavenly Father is perfect. But one of the nice things is that we can also do contrition perfectly. And we can also do sorrow semi-perfectly. Because if anything I've also been trying to say over the last week can be summarized by an expression by one of my favorite Protestants, his name is George MacDonald. God is easy to please, hard to satisfy. God is easy to please and hard to satisfy. For if there is another image of a good father that should always be ringing in our hearts and in our minds, is the guy who's willing to forgive the faults of a child as they're learning the balance of life, but will never truly be content, never truly be satisfied until he sees us mature, holy, children of such an amazing house.